Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the story of a very special woman.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Many cities are still grappling with the sheer volume of migrants at the southern border, despite tougher asylum rules now in effect. CBS's Wendy Gillette has the latest.
In El Paso, Texas, buses are bringing migrants to a processing center. There is a state of emergency in the city.
How could you do that without consulting us?
And in Chicago, residents filed a restraining order to stop a former school from becoming a shelter for migrants as other facilities reach capacity.
Parts of the nation will get some severe weather this weekend.
Areas like the Cedar Rapids area and the Quad Cities, and then into portions of Illinois as well on Saturday, could also see some strong to severe storms extending down into Indiana.
CBS meteorologist David Parkinson says parts of the Northwest will get stifling heat. Talks continue at the staff level this weekend on a strategy for raising the debt ceiling. Why aren't the principals meeting?
The meetings have been productive over the past few days, and leaders wanted to continue before they regrouped.
That's White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, who says talks between congressional leaders and President Biden are expected to resume next week. Quite the greeting for Ukrainian President Zelensky as he arrived at the home of Italy's president. Zelensky is in Rome for talks with top government officials. Later, he will meet with the Pope. A wrongful death lawsuit has been filed against several of the largest social media companies in connection with the racially motivated shooting at the Tops supermarket in Buffalo. CBS's Jerika Duncan reports.
The historic lawsuit filed against six social media companies includes Meta, Google, and Snapchat. The suit accuses the companies of designing unreasonably dangerous algorithms that promote racist, anti-Semitic, and violent material, which in part, it says, motivates the 18-year-old gunman to kill 10 innocent black people at a Buffalo grocery store. John Elmore represents four families.
We have social media platforms that know that dangerous things are happening in this community throughout this nation.
Nearly a year ago, the shooter attached a GoPro to his helmet and live-streamed the attack.
In Studio City, California, LA Lakers fans cheered as their team defeated the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors 122-101 in Game 6 of the second round series. LeBron James had 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists. This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Two American banks collapsed in the past week. As Eric Tegedoff reports, some consumers are considering alternatives like credit unions.
Troy Stang is head of the Go West Credit Union Association, which represents more than 300 credit unions in Oregon and five other states. He says tumult in the financial market historically generates interest in the local structure of credit unions.
Whether it was with the dot-com bust, whether it was with the activities that led up to the Great Recession, consumers at their kitchen tables started having these conversations more intentionally about who is it that we do our financial services with.
Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. To get depositors their money, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has stepped in. Stang notes that National Share Insurance Fund, administered by the National Credit Union Administration, is the equivalent regulator for his institutions and is paid for by the credit union system. Stang says credit unions are not-for-profit and member-owned.
We're not accountable to Wall Street investors. We're not accountable to other forces outside of our membership. And so it's a much different model.
Stang says many of the credit unions in his association have spent the last week reassuring customers and noting differences in their institution structure from others. He adds a strong financial system is important for consumers, regardless of which institution they bank with. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Have fun on the lake this summer. Treat yourself and find the watercraft you want at Action Boathouse Showroom just south of 59 on 164 in Waukesha. Check out the fun and versatile Sea-Doo Switch with its powerful Rotex jet engine. Action Boathouse Showroom also has a selection of luxury fishing boats or pontoon boats from seven top USA manufacturers. The team at Action Boathouse Showroom is excited to help you launch into the sun this season and onto the lake. Action Boathouse Showroom, just north of 59 on 164 in Waukesha. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Morning Cannolis on this Saturday, May 13th. Thank you so much for joining me on this Saturday, May 13th. This, as always, is our weekly, our weekend review, our analysis, and our discussion of those most serious and most important news stories in the areas of law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. On behalf of all of us in the broadcast studios of Civic Media, including my wonderful producer who is once again with me this morning in the studios here in Waukesha, I thank you for joining me for this hour, hopefully staying with me for the next hour too. We have got a program that is chock full of important stories in those areas, aspiration for justice, government and law, hoping that you also along the way, as you identify questions, concerns, comments, objections of yours, that you will call into our studio. Anya and I are here to take your phone calls. We're at 844-967-2789. That number once again, 844-967-2789. We do have this morning, as always, an ambitious but highly achievable agenda, a good academic syllabus for us, also engaging you in this discussion. We think it's educational. We hope it's also inspiring. And we always, always ask three questions. We ask, what happened? What are the events that we should know about? What are the facts? What do we know as of now? Second question, why is it important to know those things? Why is it important to digest those things? Why are they relevant or material to our lives here in the United States of America, here in the state of Wisconsin, and throughout our world? And the third question, what, if anything, can and should we do about those things? What actions should we take? What responses, what reactions should we pursue? What are the answers to those questions raised by the facts, by the relevance, and by the responses that we may make to those events in our lives? Thank you once again for being with me this morning. This is our 47th show since beginning way back in June of last year. And yes, indeed, in three short Saturdays, we'll be celebrating our one-year anniversary of doing Morning Cannolis, involving you in our discussions, our engagements on these important issues here of the WAUK studios, but also around the state of Wisconsin. And in observance of that, we're going to be celebrating a special time on the 2nd of June, our 50th show, some special events, some special commissions of new programs, new initiatives, new discussion formats on that day. Join us in 3 weeks. Continue to join us between now and then for this discussion on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again. Taking your calls and comments at 844-967-2789. Our syllabus this morning, our agenda, our outline for discussion items is just that. It's got a lot of things on the list here. I'm going to begin by talking about three observations that I have about the rule of law active and alive today in the United Kingdom, in Pakistan, on, and then also right here in the United States of America, substituting this morning those observations about the rule of law and justice for what is usually our initial segment here on Morning Cannolis about things that happened this day in history. This morning, some observations about events in the world in those three venues that confirm and reflect the importance of the judiciary, the executive branch, the legislature, in deciding who our government is, what it's all about, and most importantly, how we as people of our nations, both here in the United States and nations around the world, respond to government, engage in government, and the difficulty, the challenges, the concerns that we have, even in 2023, over the administration of justice and the ways of imperfect movement forward. We'll talk about all three of those, the UK, Pakistan, and yes, here in the United States of America, the southern border issues there in just a moment or so. We're also then going to revisit something we talked about in our show 2 weeks ago, April 29th of 2023. We spent a lot of time talking about this major problem, this healthcare medical problem, this violence problem that we have in America involving guns, and the onslaught that is being caused right now by the gun industry in America, and the use, the indiscriminate use of guns to compromise our safety and security on a daily basis. Revisit that, given the fact that last week, while we were on the air, we were hearing about this latest shooting in Allen, Texas. Going to revisit that, and then talk also about something a judge in Northern Virginia, a federal judge, did just last week that also implicates our future access to and the understanding of guns in America in the wake of Supreme Court decisions, including a decision of late last summer. Then we're going to talk more about the January 6th event, talk about some sentencings coming up of the Oath Keepers, and also chatting about a recent conviction and his sentencing. Talked about this a little bit last week, talking about what's going to be happening in the future with respect to the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, what that means for us. And in that connection, talking generally about the investigations underway with respect to January 6th, fake electors, some significant news right here in Wisconsin, having to do with the Wisconsin Election Commission and the focus on what the fake electors did here in Madison way back in January of last year, what that means for the rule of law here in the state of Wisconsin. Then necessarily we need to talk about two people much in the news this week, E. Jean Carroll, the recipient of a judgment, a civil judgment by a jury, handing her a $5 million judgment against a fellow named Donald Trump for not only defaming her, but also engaging in a sexual assault on her about 25 or more years or so ago. Talking about as well George Santos, this New York congressman, on the receiving end of this past week of a major indictment, a 20-page indictment, charging him with financial monetary crimes in connection with his campaign and other matters related to his recent conduct. Interestingly, not so much focusing upon the many lines that he has told about himself, his history, and his family. And then we always, as we always do, we go back to the Supreme Court. I'm going to talk a little bit about some things that have happened there in connection with the continuing ethical concerns that all of us have about the conduct of our United States Supreme Court, even as it is on the cusp coming into this month and certainly next month, the month of June, the big month during which the Supreme Court always issues its major, its big ticket opinions. That's coming up in just a few short weeks. And yes, we're going to spend a little time talking about one of those first cases today having to do with pork and pigs. Yes, that's right, pork and pigs, but also the Commerce Clause under the Constitution, the first of a major series of cases coming up fairly shortly before the United States Supreme Court. We'll be spending a lot of time in the month of June parsing through, academically looking at what these Supreme Court cases mean. We recognize, as we have throughout our history, that our United States Supreme Court has a lot to say about the rule of law in America, brought home to us in major ways in recent years, not just last year, but for the recent decades, going back throughout my lifetime, changing our understanding of what the Constitution means, how the laws of our nation are to be interpreted, and how would you respond in connection with those decisions. So lots and lots of things on our syllabus, along with Anya here today. Again, we'll take your phone calls at 844-967-2789 on all of that and more as we continue going through our analysis of law, of government, and justice in America. Let me begin this morning, as I promised, with some ruminations, some thoughts, some observations about things going on in two foreign countries and then our nation as well. Let's begin with something that was also happening a weekend ago as we were getting together on a Saturday a week ago. We know well the coronation of King Charles III, the third monarch in the United Kingdom, identified with the name Charles. The coronation again last Saturday, Sunday, continuing the celebration, the observance of that for much of this past week. Why is that important? Why does it attract my attention? Why did it attract the attention of all of you and the entire nation here in the United States of America? I was stricken, as I suspect many of you were too, certainly by the pageantry of this, the importance of it, the significance of this major event in England. Also, however, stricken by the connection that our nation plainly has, undeniably has, to Great Britain and King George at the time. And the fact that while in England, there continues to be a monarchy, plainly a monarchy that does not have the power that it did in many centuries past, a monarchy that still plays a role in government, stricken by the fact that even in England, which does now have a parliament, has had a parliament arguably since about 1688, 1689, when James II, the king at that time, fled, and the parliament at that time recognized William and Mary as the confirmed monarchs of that nation. Nonetheless, has a monarch in place to this day based upon this, not fractured, but multi-part government there in England. The point, the observation I would make is just this: that in our nation, this amazing things happened 247 years ago, never happened before on the face of this planet, that people, yes, white men, white landed property men, with great imperfections of their own, nonetheless came together and said, you know what, that's not going to be a part of the government that we're going to establish here. First, we're going to reject that notion of a monarch. And then in 1789, 234 years ago, these founding fathers, with their imperfections, nonetheless put together a document also with many imperfections that guides us to this day, and that's the Constitution of the United States of America, specifically rejecting the notion that there would be a king, and deciding that the experience that we had under the king at that time was sufficiently profoundly disturbing and distressing and destructive, that we would create a form of government never before seen on the face of this planet, that we would create an executive branch, an executive, a president that is independent of the other branches of government. We'd create a legislature, yes, much like the parliament, House of Lords, House of Commons there in Great Britain. We created a bicameral legislature as well, one called the House of Representatives, the other called the United States Senate, but independent of the executive, a check and balance. And yes, we created then a third branch called the judiciary, a Supreme Court that also has life and livelihood to this day, a very different form of government than the one that we inherited, if you will, from Great Britain. And that happened again some 234 years ago. Significant as we think about the coronation there in Great Britain, significant as we think about the ways in which our country has evolved since that time and the important lessons we have learned over the period of the last 250 years or so about the rule of law and justice in America. When we come back, two other observations, one having to do with what's going on right now in Pakistan, and then one having to do with what's going on in our southern border and other places around our nation, all related to the rule of law in America. Continue, stay with us for that important discussion.
I should give you some warning. I forgot to mention this earlier. So we're in the process of switching over the thing that runs our ads.
Okay.
So it's jumping a bit.
Okay.
So we may come back slightly sooner than you expect. And you're also going to hear when we go to break, like the last 5 seconds repeated like three times. I don't know what's causing that. That's not what's going out over the air. But it's going to be
it's
in
doing
our
a loop
heads.
For some
so,
reason.
So yeah, if we go to break and you suddenly hear like yourself again and again and again, that's why.
Got it. I will still take my cues from you and
Sweet.
Your good visual signs to
my
tell
hands,
me.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Really appreciate that. Appreciate the heads up technologically.
We anticipate we will come back at 21 minutes and 10 seconds.
Got it. Got
That's
it.
The anticipated.
All right. But you tell me, I'm going to watch your hands to tell me exactly Sweet. when that may happen. So great. Great.
Okay. I got you.
Wonderful. Thank you. You always do. Thanks, Anya.
Tips and resources at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast skies this afternoon with a slight chance for scattered showers. Daytime highs approaching 70. Northeast winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight. Chance for scattered showers. Lows dip down to about 49. Chance for scattered showers again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 58. Cloudy skies expected. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
We're talking the truth.
You can't handle.
We are back. This is Morning Cannolis. Thank you for staying with me on this morning, this Saturday morning, talking initially in our first couple of segments about things going on in the news and the reflections, the illustrations of the rule of law around our planet and then also in our nation. We were chatting right before the break about the coronation of King Charles II, the significance, the derivation of our own form of government, in part from that tradition that we inherited from England, but the ways in which, again, 250 years ago, our leaders, our founding fathers, created what is still an imperfect but nonetheless glorious republic that established a different form of government here, a tripartite form of government, mirrored in many ways and monitored in many ways by our states throughout the history of our land. A three-part government that contemplates a separate executive branch, a separate legislature, a separate Supreme Court, and judges and justices of that court as a way of ensuring that the rule of law is advanced. Very different, again, never before seen on the face of this planet, and a continuing experiment, as many people say, the Republic of the United States of America. Let's turn to another republic that is also in other ways, illustrating the significance of the rule of law alive today in our planet and in our allied nations, Pakistan. We're going to turn to Pakistan in South Central Asia. You may have watched this news devolve and develop over the course of this past week. Pakistan had a former prime minister. His name is Imran Khan. And this past Tuesday, he was arrested by an agency of the current government, that current government being led by the current prime minister. His name is Shahbaz Sharif. Shahbaz Sharif had ousted, if you will, through the elective process, the former prime minister Imran Khan, based upon a vote of no confidence in the parliament there. What happened was this past Tuesday, Khan was dramatically arrested. Armed security agents pulled him out of an Islamabad court, and that triggered about 2 days of some very deadly protests against that action in this South Central Asian country, about 230 million people altogether. And in the wake of that happening, that is the arrest of a former prime minister in Pakistan, a huge amount of violence happens in Pakistan. Government military buildings are ransacked. Military commander's home is also attacked. 2,000 activists from the former prime minister's Tehreek-e-Insaf political party, the political party that had given him power in the parliament there in Pakistan, were arrested, including some senior leaders there. And at least eight people were killed in the chaos that followed. Well, what happened? Again, plainly huge unrest. No one endorses. Everyone condemns that kind of behavior. But what happens in the wake of that is just this past Thursday, in the wake of the arrest, what happens is this case comes before the Supreme Court of Pakistan. And on Thursday, just a couple of days ago and yesterday, the Supreme Court orders that Imran Khan, this former prime minister whose arrest sparked this violence in Pakistan, is released on bail for a period of 2 weeks. And the Supreme Court in particular finds that his arrest on so-called corruption charges by this agency of the executive branch, presumably a part of the present government of current Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, that those charges were unlawful, that they were brought improperly. And the High Court says that his release must happen, and he is barred from being rearrested until at least May 17th. In any case registered against him in the jurisdiction of Islamabad, which is, again, where much of this, if not all of this, is taking place. Fascinating development. An arrest of a former leader of the Pakistani government, of the country in itself, and a response by the people, plainly violent. We do not condone it at all. Eight people killed in the melee that follows. But the Supreme Court then intercedes and says, we have taken a look at the charges brought against this former prime minister, Imran Khan, and we have found that they are invalid. And so we're ordering his release. And so Imran Khan today released from custody in the system of rule of law in Pakistan. It is a republic. It does have a parliament, many of the kinds of things that Great Britain has as well. And Khan, again, after experiencing this past week, commends the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, for their decision to release him, and says, of course, that he is vindicated. He says, I must say I expected this from our judiciary because the only hope now left, the only thin line between a banana republic and a democracy is the judiciary. That's what the former prime minister says. He tells journalists that outside the court where he is released from custody this past week. Khan himself, he's 70 years old. He was a former cricket star. He turned politician, something we've seen in other places around the world. And he was ousted as prime minister in April of last year, April 22nd, in, as I said, this parliamentary no confidence vote, which is what parliaments do as a part of their governmental operation. He was and arguably maintains his status as Pakistan's one of their most popular leaders, according to many opinion polls, replaced and succeeded again by Pakistan's present prime minister, Shahbaz Sharif. To his criticism, however one interprets this, has ordered that those people who engaged in the violence that followed the arrest of Khan this past week, that they be identified and that they be brought to justice. And so we've got all of these competing issues related to the enforcement of law, the rule of law, and the challenges that happen not only inside the political arena, but plainly inside the governmental arena. This is a story that plainly is not done. The disputes between political parties of the present and the former prime minister continue. The nation of Pakistan continues to be a place of unrest. But nonetheless, the courts today asserting their involvement, their role in this, in ensuring that there is some notion of rule of law pursued and observed in that country. A real affirmation, once again, in Pakistan, even as the messiness of republics, the messiness of democracies continues to be observed in that southern Asian nation to this very day. We'll follow up on that and other stories. And then after the break, we'll come back to our nation and talk about the rule of law here, in particular, the things we can pull from and derive from what's going on in our southern border right now in the wake of the immigration story there. Stay with us for that. Of love the immigration story there.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Tougher new rules for asylum seekers have not stopped migration at the southern border. El Paso Mayor Oscar Lesser says his city is adapting.
They come in here and we get to talk to them, and then we see how what shelters they go into, whether they're unsponsored or sponsored. It's going to make a big difference.
Severe weather moved into Nebraska yesterday, where KOLL-TV meteorologist Travis Konecki witnessed a twister.
We've got a lot of rotation with this in this thing. We do have debris being lofted into the air. There goes, it looks like a structure about a mile ahead of me or less, half mile maybe. Structure, something ran, just flew across the road.
How are those debt ceiling talks going? Well, according to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, not so well.
I have not seen from there a seriousness of the White House that they want a deal. It seems like they want a default more than they want a deal.
Congressional leaders and President Biden will continue talks next week. CBS News Brief.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
That's the vision at Holtebeck Eye Center. At Holtebeck Eye Center, they provide the most professional and compassionate care in the industry, from your first call to follow-up after treatment. If you've been dreaming of seeing clearly again, Dr. Holtebeck can restore your vision with expert care and attention to issues like cataracts, glaucoma, and diabetes complications. You'll not only see better, but feel better too. Don't wait any longer. Improve your eyesight. Visit Holtebeck.com. That's Holtebeck.com.
Feeling down, anxious, depressed? You are not alone. According to the World Health Organization, approximately 280 million people have depression, but the majority never receive treatment. At WellPoint Care Network, they can help. Their outpatient clinic staff are both qualified and caring, not to mention highly trained in partnering with you on your healing journey. Make an appointment today at wellpointcare.org. They serve all ages, infants, children, and adults. Both in-person and virtual services are available. Learn more at wellpointcare.org.
Welcome to Mount Pleasant in Racine County, your next vacation and business destination. Just 30 miles south of Milwaukee and 60 miles north of Chicago, Mount Pleasant offers scenic parks, an outstanding hiking and biking trail system, and plenty of dining, entertainment, and shopping options. But Mount Pleasant also offers endless opportunities for economic growth, making it the perfect place to establish your company. Help celebrate the sixth season grand opening of the Franksville Craft Beer Garden on May 19th. Log on enjoymtpleasant.org.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole.
Welcome back to this, our third segment this morning, our Saturday morning show, focusing on the major stories in law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. And yes, sometimes the aspiration for justice beyond our borders. In our first segments, talking about the coronation of King Charles in the United Kingdom and the historical significance of that for us certainly today, but also the recognition that our government, premised upon a completely, at the time, new and truly revolutionary way of pursuing government, created out of whole cloth, and establish in our Constitution. Also talking in the last segment about what's going on in Pakistan today and this interaction between an executive branch, a present prime minister, a former prime minister, and the role that the judiciary is playing in assessing the legitimacy of counts brought against the former prime minister for corruption. Coming finally back to our own nation here, the United States of America, let's talk about what's going on in connection with immigration and asylum seekers coming into our nation. What is the background for this? I suspect you all know well what that background is. Under the Trump administration, a set of rules and principles called Title 42, invoked to promote safety and security, the health of our nation, was invoked to change the way in which asylum seekers and their applications were administered by the immigration services. Specifically, before the invocation of Title 42, if you were seeking asylum from a foreign nation alleging that there was something about your circumstances in the country of your origin, you were being persecuted, you were the subject, the target of violence, you're otherwise somehow on the receiving end of things in that environment that will compromise your safety and security, our laws, our processes contemplate that you can, in fact, make an application to come to our nation as a part of our immigration policies writ large and make an application to stay here, to get asylum, quite literally in the literal sense of that word, from the dangers, the violence you have faced back home. And the process always was that you could come to this country conditionally and enter, cross our border, come into our nation. And yes, under the Constitution, we are obliged to and did. Hopefully, our aspiration was to treat you fairly and decently, humanely. But you would remain in this country even where your application for asylum was pending, sometimes for a long period of time. Under Title 42, under the Trump administration, based upon alleged claimed fears of the spread of the coronavirus, Title 42 invoked to change that process, to require that people coming to our nation seeking this asylum from other places, not just Mexico, a lot of people coming from Venezuela, other countries in South America, that all of those applicants remain on the southern side, the lower side of the border with Mexico, not being permitted to come into our nation, again, identified by the Trump administration as a health care concern. And that lasted for about 3 years. This past week, as things like the World Health Organization, as our own Centers for Disease Control, the authorities in our nation, the health care providers, the people who provide statements about and policy in connection with the provision of health care in our nation, declared, and we'll put declared in quotes, that the pandemic in America, at least for official purposes, is over. I want to hasten to add that while that may be a formal governmental declaration, we know that every single day here in the state of Wisconsin and throughout our nation, people continue to suffer horrifically from this virus. People continue to die. And so the notion that this is somehow over for the families who suffered losses, who continue to suffer losses, plainly that is a statement by the government, but it is not a reality for many people. Even so, the triggering of that statement means that Title 42, the observation, the conclusion that for purposes of governmental administration, the pandemic is now declared over. And again, that word in quotes. That means that Title 42 goes away, and we revert back to what's called Title 8, which again is this system whereby individuals seeking asylum, seeking entry into our nation because of their persecution back in their own nations, because of that, they can now re-enter the country, and their applications, which do have to be submitted, do have to be adjudicated, which is the point of my discussing that this morning, those can pend, and those can be on the desks of judges and Border Patrol officials and immigration officials, even while they are in this nation, and again, subject to our rules and also subject to the protections of our Constitution. As an important aside, as all of this discussion goes on about what's happening along the southern border, what's happening on this day, the second day, if you will, when Title 42 no longer applied, we're back to Title 8. The Constitution of the United States of America, again, put in place 1789 by our founding fathers, 234 years or so ago. It applies to everybody, talks about people, does not talk simply about citizens. And indeed, the Constitution applies to people who are here.
So in many ways, the Constitution has been specifically affirmed to ensure civil rights and human rights for anyone who is in our nation. That's an important doctrine, important theory to keep in mind, even as we think about the people coming to our nation and furthering the tradition that we have had as a nation of immigrants coming here. Obviously, a country, a land populated already by our indigenous populations, and then also developed along with those indigenous populations, created out of diversity that comes from those indigenous populations and the immigrants from around the world. Our country depends upon and is premised upon immigration and people coming here from other nations, along with those who have been here for tens of thousands of years. We continue to require immigrants. We continue to require asylum seekers coming here, seeking new lives and new livelihoods as a part not only of our economy, but also about who we are. Who we are as a nation, who we are socially, culturally, yes, politically, who we are as a people. And so this notion that somehow we should be hugely concerned about people coming into our country is not only antithetical to our history, but also is contrary to what our best interests are. Now, having said that, what is the reason for Title VIII? What is the reason for our having immigration rules and statutes and regulations? The answer is we need to do that in a regulated way. And indeed, in the wake of Title 42's removal and the return to Title VIII, there was an assumption that there would be a huge numbers of people coming across the border effective Thursday at midnight when Title 42 lapsed and coming across our borders again in the wake of the return to Title VIII processing and procedures. And in fact, the Border Patrol, according to reporting from past couple of days, was already holding about 28,000 migrants in detention facilities who had made their ways across the border even before this happened. Significantly, the early reporting from Thursday, from Friday, from even this morning is that while there is certainly a strong movement, a vigorous movement of individuals, people across the border, the numbers did not spike yesterday in the ways that many officials anticipated, in the way that many news people predicted would happen. And yes, crossings have reached historically high levels in the days right before Title 42 has gone away. But for example, the numbers of people coming across have not caused an absolute meltdown crisis, even though the issue is very, very serious. So, for example, you have a sheriff of Yuma County in Arizona who said that his border agents had arrested about 1,500 people on Thursday, the last day that Title 42 was in effect, and about holding about 4,000 of them, a population that plainly strains the populations there. And frankly, the charity of those towns who are trying to help those migrants. Hundreds of people released from Yuma's border holding facility on Friday in the wake of those arrests. A fleet of charter buses idling in the parking lot of a nonprofit regional center for border health. And what are they doing there? They're ferrying some of those migrants to the airport to get on to Phoenix. In other words, the process imperfect, certainly not ideal, but handling the situation in a way that is not apparently, at least up to now, the catastrophic movement, the humanitarian crisis that many people were identifying as the asylum seekers remaining on the south side of the border for the last 3 years. For weeks, the groups of people along the southwest border have filled buses of migrants every single day. 16 of those buses just yesterday carried about 800 migrants out of Yuma to other locations in the southern part of our nation. The problem of administering this remains real. I do not in any way mean to underplay, undersell, underdescribe the significance of the movement that's happening right now. But we know that the Trump administration policy no longer in place has prompted Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and yes, the President of the United States of America, to look at this situation and to say that we need a couple of things profoundly and desperately. Immediately, the president and the secretary have said, we're going to try to manage this as best we can. We are going to try to attempt to manage the movement of human beings, of people into our nation as best we can. Plainly, again, imperfectly, without absolute certainty that everyone will be treated with complete fairness. But this is the problem when, as I will speak in just a moment, moment or so about not having a unified and a consolidated immigration plan legislation for many years in our country. So what did Alejandro Mayorkas, the head of the Homeland Security Department, and the president and others do? Well, they did, in fact, send more law enforcement to the border to try to address the situation, controversial though that is, an attempt to respond to any instances of violence, other things related to this movement of large numbers of people across our borders, and significantly in trying to administer these applications for immigration movement for asylum that are now being taken now on this side of the border, establishing these regional processing centers. I mentioned one of those in describing what's going on in Yuma right now. Regional processing centers, and also established, and yes, this is controversial too, in a mobile app, and requiring that those people who are seeking asylum now in the wake of the return to Title VIII make an application, make an appointment with Border Patrol officers and agents to have their applications submitted, to have them received. It's not going to be adjudication right away, but to try to attempt as best possible under these circumstances to get that administration done in a rational and reasonable way. Doing that again through an app system, I know much criticized. Not everyone who's coming across the border has a cell phone to do it, but an attempt nonetheless to try in the midst of this processing system to establish some regularity to it. Again, is it perfect? Absolutely not. Are we certain of what's going to happen? No, we don't. This is just the second day, candidly, in which this post-Title 42 era is in place. And the administration and the Border Patrol agents, members of the state and local governments in our southern states, frankly, members of our state and local governments throughout the nation have got to respond to this issue. And like those folks in many states along the southwest border, need to respond with humanity, with charity, and understanding that although these are individuals who are not yet processed, their applications for asylum and for other immigration not yet processed, nonetheless, they are entitled to the protections of our government, the protections of our Constitution, and doing this in a way that is promoting as best we can in an imperfect system what we have now faced for many years, which is the lack of a unified environmental, and by that I mean broadly speaking, immigration program. Our Congress desperately needs, and it has attempted over the period of the past several years, to put together with bipartisan support a program of unified and consolidated and coherent and reasonable and rational immigration rules and regulations. It has failed to do that. I recall well when I was the United States Attorney, again, briefed on a package, a bipartisan practice put together by Republicans and Democrats in the Congress to try to address not all, but many of these huge immigration problems festering without resolution for many, many years. A proposal, a presentation made to us as law enforcement authorities responsible in some ways for enforcing what would have been this new omnibus immigration package and being advised of all the aspects of it. And that was going to happen during the Obama administration with bipartisan support. Senator Marco Rubio from Florida, others decided in the end not to pursue that. The entire plan fell apart. And ever since then, before then and ever since then, we have not had a Congress that addresses this in a way that makes sense. That is the petition today, that even while the administration and others in local, state, federal government attempt to address this problem, it is ultimately still a congressional issue. The president has indicated that he will sign legislation that is reasonable and rational in addressing all of this. Congress, you need to act. The House of Representatives, the United States Senate needs to address this issue in a bipartisan way, because in the end, we are talking about human beings crossing our border legitimately, trying to do this lawfully, and that is what our government should be all about. When we come back, we're going to take some callers on these issues and then move on to other issues in our national focus, rule of law, government, and the aspiration for justice. Stay with us for all of that. And the aspiration for justice. Stay with us for all of that. I didn't want to lie. Started to cry, but then remembered. And the aspiration for justice. Stay with us.
Welcome to Mount Pleasant in Racine County.
your next vacation and business destination. Just 30 miles south of Milwaukee and 60 miles north of Chicago, Mount Pleasant offers scenic parks, an outstanding hiking and biking trail system, and plenty of dining, entertainment, and shopping options. But Mount Pleasant also offers endless opportunities for economic growth, making it the perfect place to establish your company. Help celebrate the 6th season grand opening of the Franksville Craft Beer Garden on May 19th. Log on enjoymtpleasant.org. 2020. That's the vision at Holtebeck Eye Center. At Holtebeck Eye Center, they provide the most professional and compassionate care in the industry, from your first call to follow-up after treatment. If you've been dreaming of seeing clearly again, Dr. Holtebeck can restore your vision with expert care and attention to issues like cataracts, glaucoma, and diabetes complications. You'll not only see better, but feel better too. Don't wait any longer. Improve your eyesight. Visit Holtebeck.com. That's Holtebeck.com.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come pick it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football, fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 70 this afternoon under overcast skies with a chance for scattered rain showers. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Lows dip down to about 49. Overcast. Chance for scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 58. Cloudy skies expected. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 57.
We are back in this final segment of our first hour here on Morning Cannolis, talking about the rule of law in three different environments around our world. In Great Britain and the implications of what was going on there with the coronation of King Charles and reflections on our own nation, its development, what's going on in Pakistan these days in connection with the rule of law, the judiciary there interceding to release a former prime minister from custody, and then also talking just over the break about what's going on in our southwest border, the rescission of Title 42 limitations on asylum seekers, and the efforts by law enforcement, federal, state, and local to address the groups of people coming across our borders seeking asylum in our nation, seeking immigration status. Part of the problem there, as I was indicated right before the break, a system that is overwhelmed. The immigration system reliably described as having a backlog of more than 2 million cases right now, about 650 judges in our nation, wildly understated in terms of numbers, wildly overworked. The Biden administration has hired about 200 more judges since coming into office. But the problem is that we still don't have the staff to do this, and we still don't have a regime, a mechanism for addressing in a broad way all of the many. And it is complicated. It is not intuitive. It is not an easy thing to do. But legislation that would provide some clarity, some direction, and hopefully one day, not overnight, get us out of the problems we are facing right now in managing a necessary and needed and should be welcome population into this country, managing their movement into this country to ensure that they are legally here and that they are integrated into our system upon applications that are reviewed and determined that their applications are legitimate and should be taking their places as residents and perhaps ultimately citizens in our nation. Let's turn in this last segment to some of our callers who've been on the line. Thank you, as always. We appreciate people calling in with your comments, your questions, your thoughts. Let's begin with Mark. Mark, thanks for waiting on the line. Appreciate your comments this morning.
Thanks. And it's interesting that Charles III, but it was Charles I of England that indicated that the monarch is not beyond the reach of law because he actually lost his head in his conflict with the parliament.
He found out, right? Exactly.
Back in the day. And the leaders are ultimately responsible for their acts. And they can't declare divine immunity like Donald Trump has attempted to do, but or other leaders have attempted to do in the past in this country. Right. And your point on immigration is spot on. If we would start arresting the people who are hiring these people illegally, because the people are not illegal aside from the fact that they may or may not have violated the law in coming here, but they're not supposed to be, you know, they're not supposed to be hiring these people illegally, and they're hiring them illegally because they can exploit those people.
That's
and if
right,
we had a decent reformed our immigration system in this country, because the southern border has always been porous. It's been porous since the foundation since we took Texas from Mexico.
Absolutely. It is a great challenge.
And the Gadsden purchase of the other states, and that people could cross back and forth. And in the past, they crossed back and forth and they came to work and they went back home again. And now economic situations have changed. Environmental situations have changed down south of the border there. With part of it is due to the NAFTA agreements, which allowed family farmers not to make a living anymore on their farms down south of the border there. That it is just it's incumbent upon us to actually establish a decent, humane immigration policy in this country and bring these people in here legally, because if we could bring them in here legally, we wouldn't be attempting to cross the river.
Exactly.
With their children
and that's an important point. You see those pictures, Mark, of people who are putting themselves and their families at risk. We need desperately, as you indicated, to do this rightly. Should know as well, just as a footnote, a really important points there, Mark, as well, and I appreciate the endorsement of our talking about it this morning, that the United States Department of Justice also does indict and charge those people who would victimize would-be immigrants and would-be asylum seekers by getting their money from them, sometimes not following up on the requests that are made for applications. That is also a part of this. It may not be the central aspect of it, but you make an important sub-point there about the omnibus need for immigration reform and legislation that in the generations to come will guide us as we address these issues. Thank you so much for that important set of observations, Mark. We appreciate it. Dick from Madison, also on the line this morning. Dick, thanks for calling in.
I almost hate to bring this up, kind of ties in that this week with the CNN thing with Trump, he's a clear threat to democracy in my mind. And did you see any of it? And my question to you is, I think he set the plate for Jack Smith with several things he said on Tuesday or Wednesday night, whatever it was. I mean, this guy is so completely out of bounds. If he were ever to take power again, democracy and rule of law, as we know it now, would be, it just wouldn't. He's even indicated that he'd let these people out that have been prosecuted for January 6th.
Right. Lots of things there said in that CNN so-called town hall, plainly not a town hall that I think, Dick, you and I would recognize in the legitimate sense of the word, and many people, me included, criticizing CNN for presenting this as a journalism event, right? In fact, it was a MAGA rally for the former president, chocked full of his people there who were encouraging his statements on all of these things, including things like pardoning the January 6th events. We're going to talk about them in our second hour, so your comment is very, very timely. Talking about even things like encouraging us to default on our debt, a matter we're not going to talk about this morning, but things that are reckless and, again, focusing in ways that are hugely political, not advancing the thoughtful movement forward of important issues in our nation. We're going to be talking a lot about Donald Trump, not only in the wake of what we, again, euphemistically call a town hall meeting from earlier this week. I think CNN has a lot of responsibility for presenting that somewhat irresponsibly. But Donald Trump remains a major figure in American politics. We necessarily need to talk about what he says and the violence that he would presumably bring, not only physical perhaps, but also to the Republic and to the rule of law if he were to return to the White House. Thank you for that comment as well. Bill, your comment also, calling in from Oconomowoc. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for really doing a thorough job of covering the non-crisis at the border. The crisis is not really at the border. It's with Congress.
Absolutely.
We have too many criminals in Congress that are getting away with murder, and they're masking it by trying to divert attention to the border. If it's really illegal immigrants that's the case, Ron DeSantis has 4 million in Florida. He does nothing. Abbott does nothing in Texas to expedite the issue. Nothing. And they say that's a crisis. I'm sorry, folks. The crisis is kids being murdered by right-wing extremists with automatic weapons. Right. The crisis is the criminal Congress. The crisis is we have a career criminal that wants to run, be president. That's
and all
the
of
crisis.
Those things, Bill, could not agree more. That is the crisis. And again, along the southern border, we know that the numbers are not catastrophic this morning. That may change, but you're right. Absolutely. Strong endorsement. Federal, state, and local authorities need to address this issue. It is good government when they do. It is bad government, Bill, as you're saying, when they don't do that. Bill, appreciate the call. Appreciate all the callers this morning. Stay with us for our second hour coming up in just a few moments. You're saying when they don't do that. Bill, appreciate the call. Appreciate all the callers this morning. Stay with us for our second hour coming up in just a few moments. You're saying when they don't do that.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Homeownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Have fun on the lake this summer. Treat yourself and find the watercraft you want at Action Boathouse Showroom just south of 59 on 164 in Waukesha. Check out the fun and versatile Sea-Doo Switch with its powerful Rotex Gen engine. Action Boathouse Showroom also has a selection of luxury fishing boats or pontoon boats from seven top USA manufacturers.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the story of a very